Welcome to Seasoned. I'm Marisol Castro.
And I'm Chef Plum. The holidays are here, and while our celebrations do look different this year, families and friends are finding ways to stay connected, even though our gatherings and celebratory meals are a lot smaller or happening virtually.
Coming up on Seasoned, we're sharing some of our family traditions around food and talking with guests about the way food keeps us emotionally connected, even when we have to be socially distanced.
We originally recorded this show for CPTV as part of Connecticut Public's Cutline series. Almost everything you'll hear this hour, you can see as well by visiting ctpublic.org/cutline. Cutline is C-U-T-L-I-N-E. You can watch Marisol and I make a gorgeous oven-roasted salmon together in my kitchen.
Later in the hour, I'll share my coquito recipe, and you'll hear my conversation with Dr. Lori Santos, a psychology professor at Yale and the host of the Happiness Lab podcast.
And we'll talk to Eric Landegren, owner of Bridgewater Chocolate, about all the chocolate you're sending through the mail and how to make homemade truffles to give as gifts. Plus, Chef Dan Monroe of The Pantry in Fairfield, along with his daughters, share a few of the appetizers he makes for the grazers in his family during the holidays.
Before we get to Dan and his family food traditions, Plum and I shared a few of our own family holiday traditions.
Christmas Day night was always the big night in our family. Mm-hmm. So people would come over, the friends, it was like an open house, my mom used to call it. And it would be anywhere from 15 people at one point to 30 people at one point to 50 people at one point. And I can remember the smell of the crock pot meatballs that they would make. And it blew my mind because I finally asked my mom years ago, what was in those meatballs? And I found out to my broken heart, they were frozen meatballs. And she would make the sauce with the grape jelly. I know, but they were delicious. I loved them. My grandmother would show up and make these little lemon tarts. She would wrap them in this wax paper so that they could hear when someone would open them and someone would take one.
I love that. So your hand, when you wouldn't get your hand stuck in the jar for fear that grandma would come and knock you out.
Right, because you'd hear the rattling of the paper and you'd hear going, not any more of the tarts. But yeah, I love those things. I try to recreate some of those things with my family now, where we like to bake things, we like to cook things, we make things with chocolate.
Obviously.
So, you know, I have three daughters, so this kitchen is central to our life, especially in the holidays.
I would think so.
What about you? What are some of the things you remember?
Very similar. You know, I have a very big family, and our big night of celebration was, we call it Noche Buena, which is Christmas Eve.
Okay.
And my mother would... She would commandeer the kitchen. She would make us make pasteles, which is this very labor intensive. It's almost like a plantain patty. It's almost like an empanada or a tamale.
Okay.
And it takes literally 700 years to make.
And did you roll it out?
Honey child, let me tell you something. You have to grate the plantains. Then it's an assembly line because then there's meat and then there's all these other little things. And then you have to wrap it in a paper.
What?
And then you have to tie it up in kitchen twine. So it's literally assembly style.
Wow.
And it's no wonder I have three brothers and sisters because we were all used to make these pasteles.
Wow. And sounds delicious.
It's disgusting. I didn't like it, but it's actually really good. Everyone loved my mother's pasteles. And so that for me, when I think of growing up as a kid and celebrating Christmas, that's what we would do.
Have you ever thought about telling her they're not her pasteles? They're yours because you guys all made them and she's kind of watched?
I try to, but I really like my life. And I think if I said to her they're really my pasteles, Miriam, she would knock me over the side of the head with a rolling pin. But to this day, whenever I think of Christmas, I think of pasteles and just the smell of those pasteles boiling in this big pot it just permeating the whole house.
Yeah, yeah.
You should be happy to know, though, I don't force my own children to make pasteles
now. I was about to ask, you have your boys at home making them or no?
No. They do not make pasteles, but my mother is still trying to convince them that they're really delicious. She hasn't succeeded just yet, but they're still young.
So we didn't bring any with you. I was upset because I would like to taste these. They sound amazing.
Well, maybe, you know, next year.
Well, I'll come to the house. I have two hands. I can work fast. I've done lots of assembly lines.
You'll probably get along better with Miriam than I do. We will try this at some point. But you know, this time of year, we're celebrating Christmas. Mm-hmm. We're celebrating Hanukkah,
right.
Kwanzaa, Three Kings Day. Again, the central theme, at least for us, is food.
Bringing people together through food and talking about it. The best time of the year is right now, for sure, when it comes to it, because it's such a festive time of year. And food is a central part of it.
Yes, especially some tasty appetizers. Tell us about what you're doing with your friend Dan.
Dan is going to show us. He is an Army veteran. He is the executive chef at the Pantry in Fairfield, and he's showing us two amazing appetizers he likes with his daughters.
Hi, I'm Athena.
Hi, I'm Alani.
Hello, friends. Hello. We're happy to see you guys, of course. And we can't wait to see what you're making for us today. I want to talk a little bit with you about the holidays at the Pantry. How busy is it there? And
The Pantry, during the holidays, we say from Thanksgiving until mid-January, is usually pretty crazy. We're getting hit with all the holidays. We're doing covering as many different holidays as we can, through Thanksgiving, Hanukkah, Christmas, Kwanzaa, whatever. Anything you could think of, we do. If you're looking for something, we'll figure it out.
And it's been pretty busy this year, weirdly enough, even though with everything happening, you'd think it'd be kind of slow. But I heard that this Thanksgiving was actually one of the most orders we've gotten yet.
Wow. So, yeah. Well, Dan, I'm excited to see some of the traditions and some of the food you guys make around the holidays. Show us, you got a couple of recipes for us, yeah?
One thing that I did is something that my kids love, that every time I make it, you know, we get it to the table, we gather around, and everybody's always happy, and that's my shrimp and grits. Oh. And I decided to do something a little bit different this time around. We have a little grit cake.
It looks delicious.
Put a little shrimp on there that I marinated in garam masala and chipotle. Garam masala is cardamom, cumin, coriander, a little cinnamon. Then I put a little chipotle in there just to give it a little bit of spice.
Delicious. Talk about those grits and how you make them like that.
The grits are stone ground grits. They take a little bit longer. They're not like the instant grits. You could definitely use instant grits in this, but I use stone ground grits just because I like the texture of it. It takes about 20 minutes. I use milk, a lot of butter, a lot of cheese, use it. And I put a little bit more to get them a little thicker for this because I want it to be a cake. I want it to be firm.
You're putting some microgreens on there as well, right?
Oh yeah, I got a little bit of cilantro greens from two guys in Woodbridge.
That looks beautiful. I can't wait to see what it tastes like. Unfortunately, I can't taste it. So Athena, Alana, you guys have to be my tasters. Who wants to go first there? It's always fun to eat on camera when people are watching you, isn't it?
Yeah, Athena does not care.
I love it.
Every moment's notice. It doesn't matter. You tell Athena there's food and she's eating it.
Well, one of the things I want to ask you about, Dan, is because it's that food itself is so multicultural and how it's made and all the different flavors that are in that. Talk about where that comes from in your life, because it's interesting how many different cultures you have just, you know, in your family alone. I mean, it's not just a traditional kind of situation going on.
No, definitely not. We are very lucky to embrace many different cultures. My daughters are, I'm Italian, Irish, like 19 other things. My wife is Mexican and Puerto Rican. So my girls have just did their ancestry DNA, and they got everything. my nephews are half Jamaican, so we've managed to take influences from everybody. My mom has always had people at the house. There's never been any thought of not embracing people for their culture, and it's kind of crazy that I've taken that on through food, where I take something like garam masala, which isn't traditionally on shrimp and grits, is an Indian spice.
Right. Kind of
added a little bit of something to it and put my own little spin on it. And that's just how my influences translate into my food.
Well, it's definitely affected your food, even for the holidays, the holiday style food that you guys make over at your house, because I've seen a lot of it, and at the Pantry as well. Having all those different influences also gave you another great recipe to show us, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of influences and my wife and being Puerto Rican and Mexican, her Puerto Rican side comes in, and we make these tostones, which these are raw tostones on the cutting board.
Well, talk about what a tostone is and how do you make it to begin with? Because you use a plantain, right?
Plantain. It's a plantain. It's a big, giant, firm, green banana. You'll see them stacked up. You'll see some really green ones, and then you'll see actually the yellow, black ones, and they're used for different applications. For these, we needed the dark green ones. You'd want them to be darker because they'll crisp up really nice because that starchiness is still there.
Right.
You peel off to the best of your ability. Some people soak them. Peel off the green off of it. Cut them into nice little wedges. You can do any size you want. You can make them bigger. Some people use them to make sandwiches. Make them like a half a plantain. You cut it in half and you smash it down. And we have a little tostone smasher.
Oh, look at this. I love this. This is amazing. I've never seen a tostone smasher before. You got to demo it first. You got to show us how it works.
So you take the tostone, you take the previously fried tostone. So the one fry, you do it one fry, you squeeze it down, and it just kind of gives you that perfect little A little harder than it looks because these things are firm. And then you throw it back in the fryer and you get the beautiful crispy tostone.
Yeah, look how crispy and awesome that looks. And you got to salt those right away, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Right out the fryer.
Yeah, the difference between these and those like blackish yellow ones is these ones are actually like savory tostones, and the other ones, they're not even called tostones. They're just sweet plantains.
Nice.
So,
nice. And is this like a, like, this is something that would definitely be served in the holidays at the house, right? You would have this with dipping sauces all the time.
We invent holidays just to make them.
I love that. Yeah. Now talk about some dipping sauces you have for this.
The traditional dipping sauce varies on where you're from. It's a very Caribbean, South American dish. So obviously from country to country, they vary. For us, my wife, she makes this. This is her recipe. It's a garlic sauce. It's a lot of garlic. Vinegar, olive oil, sazon, a little bit of chili flakes for a little bit of spice. So you get this kind of acidic, spicy, delicious, and it's perfect. It cuts that grease on that tostone, and you get that crisp on there, and it's just everything.
Come on, now, that's what I'm talking about.
Sauce to dip it in, but a lot of people use ketchup mayo too, which I think is probably the most traditional way to eat it.
It's almost like a Thousand Island dressing.
Yeah, it's literally just ketchup and mayonnaise, and they use it for like mofongo and stuff like that. So plantains and that is a good mix.
That's what I'm talking about. That sounds delicious. We got time for one more, Dan. What else you got for us?
All right, so I got a super healthy dish. Super easy, great, because when you're making food, it tends to be that people come in, there's those people early and they're roaming and they want to eat. Called grazers, you know, the people that come in and, you know, they're kind of looking around, what can I eat? So you want something quick, easy, and I like to try to go a little bit healthy. So I have this kale and edamame dip, and it's blanched kale, edamame, garlic, tahini, a little bit of chili, roasted poblanos. And
I mean, the problem is that sounds way too healthy for the holidays, which I kind of love. Alani, is that delicious or is it one of those too healthy type things?
I think it's really good.
And so how do you serve that, Dan, normally?
It can be done any way. You put it on a cracker, you can use it in chips. But for what I'm doing, the application I'm looking for is, like I said, people coming in, it's quick and easy. You take all the ingredients, you throw it in a blender or a food processor, you blend it all together and it's done. And then you have it. And then when people show up, you just simply take it. This is a baguette that I toasted with a little bit of olive oil and salt. But like I said, it could be crackers, it could be chips, and it's done.
Wow.
Put it down, and then they come along and they say, what's there to eat? And you say, hey, there you go. Oh, what is that? Give it a try. And it also creates a conversation. You know, why this is too healthy. It's not good. And when, you know, you blow their mind away with how delicious it is, you know, they don't know how to take it.
And this is something that we sell at the pantry. It's actually very popular. A lot of people
nice.
Like the holidays and stuff.
I love something like that too, where you can make it more holiday and more festive if you want by adding a little, you know, roasted red pepper oil onto it or some sort of, you know, something red, some kind of maybe like a pepper, red pepper.
Yeah, make it red and green. Make it Christmassy.
There you go. You can make it very festive. I love it. Guys, all these recipes sound delicious. You know, I feel very lucky for you, Alani and Athena, that you get to eat this delicious food your father makes for you. I know you guys also make great food as well.
All the time.
Well, listen, I wish the best for you guys. Happy holidays to you. Thank you so much for taking the time for joining us. And I look forward to seeing you guys on down the road.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Happy holidays, guys.
Happy holidays.
That was Chef Dan Monroe and his daughters, Athena and Alani. Dan is the executive chef of The Pantry in Fairfield.
We have another holiday food tradition to share with you. And this one is from a voice you are likely very familiar with at Connecticut Public, the host and producer of Audacious, Kyone Wolf.
I don't need an excuse to make chili, but New Year's Eve is a great day to make a big pot of chili. And if you do eat meat and you find yourself making chili often, you may also default to including tomatoes in your chili. And this New Year's Eve, I want you to consider leaving the tomatoes out. What? Okay, here we go. Chop up your meat, cook it, put in some broth, put in your spices, put in your peppers, all the things that go into your favorite pot of chili, but leave out the tomato, and I think you'll find that it is much more of a meaty experience, and you're making chili. Make it be meaty, you know? That's my favorite way to enjoy chili. The second favorite way to enjoy chili is on New Year's Day, when I make very cheesy scrambled eggs, and in the bowl, half of it is the cheesy scrambled eggs, and half of it is the reheated beefy chili from the night before. Treat yourself. Happy New Year.
Treat yourself indeed. Thank you, Kyone. After the break, oven roasted salmon with garlic, rosemary, lemon, beurre blanc. I'll walk you through how to make it every step.
And my conversation with Dr. Lori Santos. She'll help us frame this very different holiday season as an opportunity to savor the most important parts of our traditions.
We want to fill our holidays with so many things that we don't have time to really savor any one of those individual things, right?
I'm Marisol Castro.
And I'm Chef Plum. Salmon and much more coming up after the break. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Seasoned. I'm Marisol Castro.
And I'm Chef Plum. You're listening to a show we recorded in my kitchen as part of Connecticut Public's Cutline series. It originally aired on CPTV, and you can stream it anytime by going to ctpublic.org/cutline.
A little later in this segment, you'll hear my conversation with Dr. Lori Santos from the Happiness Lab podcast.
But first, just because we're not making a huge holiday ham or a standing rib roast for a crowd doesn't mean that we shouldn't make a showstopper for the family to swoon over. My salmon is simple to make, but it's super holiday worthy, trust me.
It is very impressive. I can definitely vouch for that.
Salmon is one of my favorite things to cook here in my family. And this recipe is a fantastic recipe you can still make easily at your house, serve, you know, 5-6 people, but okay, have that beautiful presentation, kind of show everybody, boom.
So does this salmon make its way into the Plum family holiday dinner table?
100%.
Really?
We love making salmon here at our house. We have a lot of people in our family who don't eat meat.
Okay.
So making salmon is always a great option for that too.
All right, I'm in.
Let's do it.
Sign
so what
me
we
up.
Have here is a beautiful side of line caught salmon. You can see how this side of the salmon here and this side, they're different thicknesses,
yes,
right? So what you want to do is you want to trim this up a little bit. So I just like to take this tail piece. I'm just going to cut that. And you can still save that for the next night or use that for another night or what you want. You want it? Here, sure.
Thanks.
There you go.
I'm so excited I get to be your sous chef.
You're doing a great job.
Thank you.
Salmon has pin bones running through it. Luckily, where I get my fish, the fishmonger takes them out. But I always double check. The best way is to use the two best tools you have in the kitchen, which are these. So take your hands and don't be afraid. Just touch it and run it across. Like, I don't feel anything in here.
Okay.
But as I come down here, I can feel them.
Oh.
So again, we want to even this piece of fish up.
Right.
Take my knife and just slide it right across there.
That is a sharp knife.
Take off.
I'm so jealous.
That piece of belly fat right there. So now we have a beautiful, it's nice and even piece of salmon right there. So what we're doing is we're going to make a salmon hammock.
Salmon hammock?
Salmon hammock. That's what I have
salmon
to call it.
Salmon hammock.
Yeah, so just grab that piece of foil right over there.
Okay.
And just fold it in half the long way.
Long yep. ways. Okay.
And then we're going to take that and put it down right on our tray.
I wish you had told me I was going to be doing origami. Here?
Now give me a little oil just on top of that, a little olive oil.
Okay, is this a neutral oil? Olive
this
oil?
This is just olive oil. Yeah, you could use avocado oil. You could use a vegetable oil. I prefer to use olive oil.
Sure. Is that
just
good?
Your hands just rub it so it can, like, it's all
sure.
over there. Yep. Don't be afraid. Get your hands in there.
I'm not.
What that foil is there for, when this cooks, it makes it much easier to lift it off.
Oh.
So it doesn't break.
You're so smart.
That's what the salmon hammock does. We're halfway there.
Whew.
So what we're going to do now with this piece of salmon is we're going to salt it. And salting is really, really important. Let me explain to you why.
It adds flavor.
It does add flavor.
Well, thank you.
But aside from the flavor, if you see a lot of pieces of salmon, sometimes people cook, they get that white albumin-y stuff coming out of the salmon after they roast in the oven.
I get that when I make salmon in the oven.
Right. So what happens is we got to draw that out. That comes from the moisture in the fish.
Okay.
So if we draw that out, what we're going to do is take the salt here and just mm-hmm. pinch some salt all over the fish for me.
Okay.
Don't think of it as we're seasoning the fish. We're just salting it, just like that. Yep. That's perfect. And what
okay.
we'll do is now we'll pop this guy in the fridge for about a half an hour and just let it rest. Let that, it's going to happen.
Okay.
And that moisture will come to the top and we can dab it right off of there.
Okay.
While that's working like that, we need to make our salmon glaze. Okay.
Oh, good.
So our glaze, super simple. I like to use a little bit of honey.
Okay.
I like to use a little bit of mustard, salt and pepper, of course, and a little bit of lemon. I want to use the zest of it. That's the outside.
Sure.
Here. When you get into that white pithy part, that's
not so good.
No, that's super bitter.
Yes.
So we'll take this and just use our zester.
You use the whole thing.
Yeah.
The whole lemon. Now, are you also going to use lemon juice?
We are. No waste here.
Right.
No waste here.
And smart, because I've done the opposite. I've juiced the lemon first and then realized, oh.
Doesn't work so well.
I need
the peel. Zest first, for sure.
Oh, that smells so good.
Doesn't it? We use about a teaspoon of
mustard.
Mustard there, Dijon mustard. So I use a little bit of honey in this because The browning is caused by the sugar caramelizing.
Okay.
It's a misnomer. Meats do not caramelize. No. Meats do what's called the Maillard reaction.
The Maillard relaxation.
Right.
Relaxation?
That's good.
Reaction.
So we want to get some nice color on there, so we'll add a pinch of salt here. We're going to add a little bit of black pepper. And always use fresh cracked black pepper.
Always.
Always, always, always. You know why?
That's a lot of pepper.
Yeah, we love pepper.
Okay.
And here, you can mix this up for me,
well,
right?
Well, thank you. I thought you'd never ask.
Fresh ground black pepper, always. When you use pre-ground stuff from the store, you get those little containers of it. It could have been ground 15 years ago.
Oh.
Long time it sits in there.
But if that's the only thing available.
Then that's what you use.
Then that's what you use. Okay.
Okay.
I'm risking my life.
So we're going to mix that up. That's going to be put all over the glaze on top of our fish.
Ooh.
It's going to be beautiful. It's delicious. Awesome.
There you go. Perfect. Did I make you proud?
That looks great.
Very lovely.
Some of that moisture you can see starts to rise to the top. So what I do is just take a paper towel and just give a little dab on it like this.
A little dab will do you.
You don't have to do this whole part of it, but you really want that appeal when you put it on the table. Yeah. So I want it to look as best I can, and that's going to help that happen.
Absolutely.
All right. So now we've got our little glaze we made here. Mm-hmm. We're just going to take this and pour it right down the middle there.
Beautiful.
Look at that. And this is just flavor on top of flavor on top of flavor.
On top of flavor.
We're going to take our spatula here. You can do this. Just spread that out for me, okay?
I failed art.
You got this. Come on, just paint it on there using the spatula. Look at that.
Okay. So remind me again, you salted this, you trimmed it, you put it in the refrigerator for 15 minutes?
About a half an hour. And then while that was in there, we made up our glaze. We preheated our oven to 400 degrees.
Excellent.
And then we're brushing that on there here. Let's put the other side of this guy here. All right, so we've got
this is mildly soothing.
It's right? It's a thing.
It's a thing.
The final little touch I like to do on this is my wife's favorite part. She loves to have lemons that are roasted to squeeze.
I love that.
Yeah, to squeeze on top of the salmon as well. Three lemons here. I split them. I'm just kind of put them on just like this.
Oh, just whole like that. Just or like halved. That.
You don't have to do this part, but I just put a few drops of olive oil on there to help kind of roast them a little bit.
Okay.
And a pinch of salt. Just on top of the lemons.
How lovely.
Because lemons don't come seasoned. Now, 400 degrees, 30 minutes, this will start to caramelize, those lemons will start to brown and get soft, and that juice in there gets nice and sweet, and you can squeeze it over top. Delicious.
I love it.
Let's get this guy in the oven. Okay, we've got our salmon, we've got our lemons, but we need a sauce.
Everything needs a sauce.
I couldn't agree more. So we're going to make a rosemary garlic beurre blanc to go with this.
It sounds fancy.
You know, that's the idea. We want to feel fancy. It's the holidays.
Obviously,
right?
Yes.
And if you want to bring somebody together, what do? Make something fancy for them. Or at least make it feel like it's fancy.
Sounds fancy, right.
Exactly. All right. Let's start with the garlic clove. I always like to use fresh garlic cloves. I don't like to use the jarred garlic.
They freak me out.
Yeah.
If I'm being honest.
It smells weird.
Go fresh
garlic. Fresh. So yes. I give a little smash with my hand, just like that.
Mm-hmm.
Take it apart.
Oh, you don't do the back of the knife.
I got these big mitts. I just use these.
True.
You know.
Okay.
So I got this, right? And then what I'll do is take my knife and just rough chop it, right?
Okay.
What we're doing is expanding the surface area of the garlic.
You want to
get really chefy with it. Then we've got a little rosemary here, one of my favorites. Here's our pan. We need a little bit of lemon. Use our fancy squeezer
this
here.
This is my favorite part.
So squeeze that lemon right in there into the pan. You want to get about a quarter of a cup of lemon juice, which to me generally ends up being about one full lemon. And if you happen to get any seeds in there, make sure you take those guys out too. And then what we're going to do is we're going to add about a quarter cup of white wine.
Does it matter what kind of wine?
I like to use a Sauvignon Blanc when I'm cooking because I don't want it to be overpowered by any of the wooden barrels that the wine can be fermented in.
Oh my goodness, not the wooden barrels.
Well, you know, I get that vanilla taste. It's okay.
It's but a whole situation. Let's stick to the sauce.
Sauvignon Blanc works for me. Then we're going to add our rosemary and garlic right
Beautiful.
In.
Beautiful.
And we're going to bring this to a boil, right? And obviously...
Some salt.
Why?
Because you said so.
Doesn't come seasoned. You got to season it. Right?
Seriously?
A little black pepper, because you know how much I love my black pepper.
I know you love your black pepper. You're freshly ground.
And then what we're going to do is we're going to pop this on the back of the stove and let it come to a boil and reduce down by about 25%. So you're thinking, oh, I got to do math in a pan?
Yes.
Just look at it. And once it comes to a boil, it's pretty much ready to go.
Okay.
So we'll bring this
It already out. Smells delicious.
Yeah. Beautiful. We got bubbles coming everywhere, so it's boiling. I'm now going to take a stick of butter here. If your butter is cold, chop it up, put it right in there. And again, it looks like a lot of butter you're putting in this, but you're feeding a lot of people here. So you need sauce for the entire fish. So don't be afraid of it. What you want to have happen is the butter comes together with the wine and with the lemon juice. It'll start to melt. Once that butter's in, you want to turn the heat off. Oh yeah, look at this.
Nothing says love in a pan like a whole stick of butter, garlic, and wine.
Sam, it's just about there. Can you smell it?
It smells delicious.
Oh, I love it. It's fantastic. And the sauce is great. Let's take it out of the oven and see where we are.
Okay.
Oh, look at this. Ooh, look at this beauty.
Ooh, beautiful.
Look at that beautiful color.
It's really pretty.
All over here, right?
So the beautiful and that's color, from the glaze.
That's from that glaze, right? None of that weird white stuff coming off
right.
of it.
Right.
And our lemons are nice and charred and soft. Beautiful, right? Now, I've got a platter right there in front of you. So we're going to grab our salmon hammock.
Oh, fantastic.
Just
finally.
Like this, right?
Dun, 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 dun.
We're going to lift underneath all this.
Okay.
There we are.
One, two,
there we go.
Three.
Because you want it to be one whole piece.
Right, because that gives the wow factor.
So I tell you what, put your
sure.
up here.
Teamwork.
Slide this guy.
Yeah, buddy.
Makes the dream work. Look at that, okay?
Wow.
Do this guy to the side here.
Gorgeous.
And then we slide our salmon hammock out.
Okay.
Just like that. We'll take our sauce now. You ready? Just to be safe, I usually pull the rosemary out of it because I don't want to dump it on top
of
it.
No, that's not nice.
But then what we'll do is just pour it right on top.
This was so easy to make.
There we go. You smell it too, the aroma.
It smells
amazing
so
off of
good.
That, right? We'll put some of our lemons on here. You can make it super pretty by using a little bit of greens. I have some.
Oh, you just happen to have some microgreens laying
beautiful.
Around?
We do keep microgreens in my house. Micro beet greens, I think, look so pretty on this. Because they actually add a lot of flavor to it too, which is cool. So check that out. You put that on the table and look at that. How great is that?
I mean, come on.
Boom.
Listeners, don't worry if you've missed any of those steps or measurements. You'll find the complete recipe for plums oven roasted salmon at ctpublic.org/seasoned. Dr. Lori Santos is a psychology professor at Yale University. She teaches the class The Science of Well-Being, and she's the host of the Happiness Lab podcast. Dr. Santos joins us to talk about how people are experiencing joy during this strange moment in history.
You know, for many of us, we're experiencing joy in a lot of the same ways that we experienced joy before the pandemic. You know, we can get joy in the connection we have with the people we care about. We can get joy in the really simple things in life, you know, the warm coffee mug in the morning or, you know, your kids' laughter and things like that. I think we're going back to a lot of the simple basics. Sometimes we think joy has to come from particular circumstances. You know, I have to be on the town or I have to be, you know, at my favorite restaurant or everything has to be perfect. I actually think one great thing about this pandemic is it's caused us to realize that we can still get joy in these tiny spots and we might need to appreciate those even more.
And I know food in particular, especially in different cultures, food is how we express ourselves. You know, my family, I express my love by cooking you this pot of delicious rice or whatever that may be for your particular culture or family, but it's different now. Those big celebratory meals are not so big anymore. So how do we manage that? How do we still say, I love you, say, I appreciate you, say, let's enjoy this moment together when we can't have those big, enormous, grandiose meals?
Yeah, well, I think one of the first things we need to do is to acknowledge that. Like, to acknowledge, like, this kind of sucks, right? It kind of sucks not to have patients we really care about, right? I think sometimes we're trying to make everything so perfect and kind of kludge it together. Forget, we need to just say that. You know, nobody wanted this, and this is not what we really thought our holidays would be. But, like, let's try to move forward and do the best we can. So I think the first thing is to, like, acknowledge this sort of sucks, and we're going to do the best we can. The second thing, I think, is to kind of figure out what are the parts of these traditions that you really care about, right? You know, sometimes, for example, over the holiday season, it's not just, like, one meal that we want to savor together. You know, it's the cookies and the dinner and the fudge and the chocolates, right? I think we can allow ourselves to pare things down in a way that might even be better, right? You know, maybe the kind of thing that we want to pare down even in the future, right? Because we didn't need so much stuff. I think sometimes we want to fill our holidays with so many things that we don't have time to really savor any one of those individual things, right? You know, I've watched this myself in my own holidays where it's like making cookies and gingerbread and this stuff, and I'm just frantic, right? I'm so time famished, I'm not enjoying any of it. You know, this holiday, we kind of have the opportunity to really pare things down in a way to get to just the stuff that matters, just the stuff that we care about most, and in a way where we can enjoy those individual things a lot more.
You raise such an important part, because I think, especially this time of year, holidays, I think about my own family, I think about my friends who have to make the cookie swap. Even though we're doing it over Zoom, I have to do these 12 cookies, but wait, I also have to do, you know, these seven fish for Christmas Eve. Do you have practical advice
for folks who get so caught up in that, I got to do this next, you know, instead of just living in the moment?
Yeah, I think one of the things we really need to embrace in general, but especially during this strange time, is what's called JOMO. You know, many of us have heard of FOMO, which is this feeling of missing out. FOMO is the opposite. It's the joy of missing out, right? You know, I think we really need to savor the fact that, you know, we're not going to a billion holiday parties and, you know, buying all these dresses and doing these kinds of things. Like, sometimes we forget that we can increase the happiness in our life by taking things out rather than bringing new things in. And I think this can be a really great opportunity for that. Another tip is to really try to figure out what are the important parts of this, right? You know, why did those, you know, cookies or that gingerbread house become such a holiday tradition? What were you trying to get out of the ham, right? Like, dig in to try to figure out what your family or what you were trying to accomplish. And often what you were trying to accomplish is a feeling of togetherness, to have some moment that created memories, right? It wasn't about the ham or those specific peppermint cookies. It was really about what you were doing with them. And I think once you have that insight, you can think carefully about, oh, how can I build that kind of connection in? Again, maybe without the cookies, or maybe in a different way. You know, maybe we're all having our own meal, but we do it over Zoom and we still have the laughter and so on. You know, maybe that particular thing you cooked is the important part of it. Right. Everyone loves the spring rolls. You have to make them, right? You know, then you'll know what the important parts are. But the key here is to use this strange time as an opportunity to kind of dig in and figure out, okay, what were we really getting out of this? And can we bring back some of those positives in a different way?
And to that end, which is not necessarily holiday related, but I think just a curiosity, what is the connection between food and happiness? Is there one?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, food is one of the main things we tend to savor, right? You know, food is like delicious. We are like naturally biological organisms who like love to eat stuff in general, and especially the sort of delicious, fatty, sweet stuff that we get in the holiday season, right? You know, it's just a moment of joy for us. The second thing, though, is that food is really a major way in which we socially connect, right? When you think of a lot of your happiest family memories, often they're around food. And there's no secret to that, right? You know, it's a way to get the kids back into the kitchen, or to get the kids to come back home, right, if they're living far away. But it's also just a way that we culturally tend to connect. You know, food links us to our histories. It links us to our family identities, right? And that's one of the reasons it features so prominently in these kinds of situations. But another thing we know is that food, in some sense, ends up tasting better, and we have a more positive experience with food when we're sharing it with another person. One study by the Cornell researcher, Erica Boothby, had folks taste chocolate either when they were doing that by themselves or when there was another subject beside them that they weren't speaking to that was tasting chocolate. And what she found is that the chocolate tastes better when you're tasting it with someone else. And I think that's the kind of thing we do over the holidays. We save our best meals for these moments together. And in some ways, even those meals that already taste amazing will taste better if we're sharing them with another person.
Dr. Santos, I don't know about you, but if it's a really tasty piece of chocolate, I don't want anyone next to me because I don't want to share it. I don't want to share it.
In a sense, the subject gets their own chocolate. So you get your whole one yourself, and you know they're getting their own.
All right. Thank you for making that clarification. I have an idea of what savoring food means, but I wonder what it means to you and how it creates that connection between mind, body, and spirit and food.
So savoring is really a process that I think we need to engage in more for food and for all kinds of things in life. Savoring is just the act of intentionally paying attention, right? Noticing what it's like to taste something. You know, so often, even when we're eating something super delicious, we can eat it, you know, with our mind wandering or while we're checking our email or just not there and paying attention. Savoring is the act of being there. You're asking yourself this question, what does this taste like? You know, what does this really look like? You know, how would I describe this to someone? You almost pretend you're an alien who's seeing this meal for the first time and experiencing it, like with all of your five different senses. That's savoring. When you eat a meal like that, you kind of notice what it tastes like. That's when you're paying attention enough that it can turn into one of those memories. You know, not so in the way that we often go about our holiday meals, where I'm like, you know, popping Christmas cookies as I'm talking to somebody, you know, presents and things, right? You know, so the act of eating less or eating different kinds of things, but savoring more, even if it's not the thing that we're used to, even if it's not our favorite Christmas dessert, it can actually have a bigger impact on our well-being just by being present, just by being there to notice it.
That was Dr. Lori Santos of Yale University and the host of the Happiness Lab podcast.
We're going to take a short break, but before we do, let's hear from a member of our own season team about her favorite holiday food traditions.
I'm Robin Doyon Aiken, one of the producers of Seasoned. One of my favorite holiday food traditions is smoking a pork butt low and slow on Christmas Eve to have for Christmas dinner. I know pulled pork sandwiches are not exactly holiday food, they're more of a tailgating food, but my family really looks forward to it, and we eat the pulled pork in all kinds of things all week long. A second holiday food tradition I look forward to is that every year, my Auntie Mary sends me a very simple pie dough cookie. We call them Tediscas. I have no idea where that name came from, but that's just what we call them. It's just pie dough rolled out with butter smeared all over it and lots of cinnamon sugar on top. She rolls them up, cuts them into 1-inch pieces, and bakes them off. I could easily make these cookies myself, but I don't. I wait for my Auntie Mary's Tediscas to come in the mail from Texas. And every time I eat one, I think of all the Christmases we spent together when I was growing up.
After the break, Bridgewater chocolate. Lots of you are staying connected through that particular food, myself included. Plus, I'm going to share my recipe for coquito, that is Puerto Rican eggnog. I'm Marisol Castro.
And I'm Chef Plum. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Seasoned. I'm Marisol Castro.
And I'm Chef Plum. Marisol and I are sharing some highlights from a recent Cutline episode we hosted on CPTV. Stream it anytime at ctpublic.org/cutline.
And now for one of our favorite topics during the holidays and really just every day, chocolate.
We're joined now by Eric Landegren, the founder and owner of Bridgewater Chocolate with locations in Brookfield and in West Hartford. Eric, how are you?
Could not be better.
Chocolate is not just for Valentine's Day. It's also a huge gift to give around the holidays. Tell us about this time of year, how busy it is for you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you hit it on the nail head. What do we say? A lot of people think Valentine's Day maybe is the major holiday for chocolate because it's the holidays where you really only think about maybe chocolates and roses or chocolate and flowers anyway. But Christmas holiday together with Hanukkah is, my guess is, 10 to 15 times bigger than Valentine's Day.
Wow.
To answer your question, means a lot.
Especially the way things are now, a lot of people really are kind of connecting through food, and chocolate's got to be at the top of that list.
Going into this extended pandemic that we've all experienced, I had no idea what to think or expect, like the rest of us probably. And I'm thrilled to see that chocolate seems to be one of those things that people do not want to give up. And I'm very happy for that.
One, I want to know, though, from your perspective, because you live and breathe chocolate, what kind of emotion does that bring out in people? I mean, you're around it all the time. You know, you hear different things about chocolate. It's an aphrodisiac. It makes people happy. It's delicious. What is your experience with chocolate and our emotions?
My partner, Andrew, and I have been doing this since 1999 together. And I am fully responsible and fully committed to everything in regards to the product. Right. So this time here, I have a little bit of time and I'll help out in right now, just assembling all the mail orders that comes in every morning. Today, I think we had about maybe 300 today. And when we put those note cards in with the orders, I get really touched because the notes that people write, I stop and I read them, and they're the most sentimental, heartwarming notes. Not every single one, obviously, but so many. And then many of them are related to this time we're going through and how they think about each other, or I want to warm your day, or I want to maybe brighten your day a little bit, or whatever it might be. It could be people that have been sick, or they're getting better or get well. Thank God that us as human beings do care about each other. And I see it every morning, and it's really, really heartwarming.
A lot of people at home, especially during the holidays, you make a lot of cookies, you make a lot of sweets and things like that. So yeah, to give to people as gifts, you know, nothing really shows your love more than something you made for somebody. What's some tips you would give to people at home working with chocolate?
I think one of the simplest secrets is to make truffles. It was invented by a French chef at the Fouchon in Paris. They had leftover chocolate filling for cakes, and he decided to roll them up into balls and throw them in cocoa powder. And you get these little things that look actually like a mushroom truffle. And It's a rolled piece of ganache, or ganache meaning as a soft chocolate. And it's the easiest thing in the world to do. And it's a 2-to-1 recipe, 2 pounds of chocolate to 1 pint of cream. Melt it together, heat the cream, put the chocolate in, and use a good chocolate, stir it, let it cool down. And a few hours later, if you refrigerate it, or the next morning, roll it into little shapes that you like and throw it in cocoa powder, and you have an absolutely wonderful confection. But then, besides that, I think molded chocolate is fun and it's easy. You can find novelty molds. And if you learn tempering, you could, like I showed you before, you can make little, we do them and sell. We always get a demand for them with stocking stuffers, but they're fun for people to do.
Oh, look at that snowman.
They could decorate them and stuff.
Yeah, you can decorate them. If you do it with your kids or your family, you can make a little, it becomes an activity. And when we're talking about how to be together and what can we do to be together, I think it's a fun thing to do together. Absolutely.
And the easiest thing to remember, if you're going to melt chocolate, double boilers. Get a pan of water going, put a bowl on top of it. But key thing, make sure the water does not get in that chocolate. It'll ruin the whole thing.
Sadly, I've learned that the hard way.
Thank you so much, Eric. These are delicious, and I look forward to seeing you down the road. And I'm going to keep eating these. You might as well finish talking because I'm eating.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
That was Eric Landegren, owner of Bridgewater Chocolate. We started the hour by sharing a couple of our own food traditions, and while making my mother's pasteles is not exactly a tradition I really embraced, her coquito is definitely one I can get behind.
I love all these ingredients. What are we making?
We are making coquito.
Let me try it. Coquito.
You could almost pass for Puerto Rican.
Was that good?
It was very good.
Hey.
I'm so proud of you. You've been coquito. Practicing. Coquito, in the simplest terms, is Puerto Rican eggnog.
Oh, okay.
You will find it in households during the holidays across the land. It is delicious. It's creamy. It's sweet. And I used to watch my mom make it when I was a kid.
I love eggnog.
Yes.
I love even just getting the cartons of eggnog, you know, from the store.
And then you just do it.
Just add a little rum to it or whatever you want to put in there.
Yeah. The alcohol of choice is going to be rum for most people that make coquito. Coquito can be polarizing. And here's why.
That sounds bad.
Some people make their coquito with egg.
Yep. Like a regular eggnog you'd make with egg.
There is no egg in this coquito, but I promise you it's going to be delicious.
All right.
Okay.
Let's talk about what we've got here, these ingredients.
Yes.
I see a little evaporated milk, sweetened condensed milk,
yep.
Cream of coconut. Yeah.
Yes. Can you say Coco Lopez?
Coco Lopez.
It's like you're bilingual.
Not bad. Uh-huh. Not bad. It's the only thing she's ever told me I'm good at. We've got a little vanilla extract here, some ground nutmeg.
Yes.
And this is a little coconut milk, right?
Yes, exactly.
And a treat.
The beauty of this is you really just pour and mix and that's it.
Great.
Are you ready?
Let's do it.
Okay. Evaporated milk.
Okay.
Pour her in.
Okay. I'm pouring the evaporated milk in.
It's so creamy.
The whole can.
The whole can.
Okay. The whole can.
Put it away. Do your condensed milk.
Here's a
spatula. I love doing this in your kitchen because you have all the appliances and tools that we need.
So I used to do a fun thing with this sweetened condensed milk. If you take this can and boil it for about 15, 20 minutes, it makes the most amazing caramel.
Oh,
super easy.
I like that. Now don't put that away too far because we're going to need it again.
Gotcha.
Do your cream de coco. All
right.
You're making a disaster, but you know what?
Listen.
Did they teach that to you at CIA? Is that a learned trait?
I missed my Coco Lopez class.
Beautiful. Now take your condensed milk vessel again.
This guy,
Put the regular coconut milk in it. I'm trying to make cleanup as easy as possible. Notice there's not a single measuring cup.
Or things on your side. It's all on my side. Is that why I'm making it?
I'm a very smart lady.
She's thinking
Keep
ahead.
Going.
So one full can.
One full can.
All right. And this is unsweetened.
Correct. Because you have the sweet with the condensed milk.
There we go. One full can like this.
And it goes,
And then we've
Give me a little cap full of the vanilla.
Okay. And I like to use real vanilla extract. Don't use that fake vanilla stuff.
Thank you.
It doesn't taste good. Just spend the extra $2 and get real vanilla extract.
I'm so glad you said that.
Just borrow this towel because you're making me spill things.
And I love that you're cleaning up.
Well, you know.
And a dash of nutmeg.
Okay.
Maybe 3 dashes.
3 dashes. One, two.
Okay, maybe just 2.
Oh.
No, do it over your shoulder. I like that choreography. Beautiful.
There we go.
I don't think any landed in the blender, but that's neither here nor there. Give us our...
It looks good. No? Okay. And then we need a little...
Jigger of, of a little rum.
All right, we'll use a little rum here.
Yeah.
And you can use a white rum with this. You can use a spice rum, right?
Correct.
So just one. I think we probably should put 2 if we're making...
It's the holidays, do too. Jeez Louise. Or the whole bottle, as it were.
A little bit, it wasn't that much.
Everything okay. We just put in here, you can find in your local grocery
Easy.
Store. On okay. We go.
Now, that's nice and tight on there.
That's nice and tight.
Take your towel, put the towel over top, and put one hand on it just when you start it to always make sure, because you never know, that top could pop off. I've never had it happen, but I've watched it happen hundreds of times. And usually I would not have told her that, but this is my kitchen.
You don't want to mess. This is a very fancy blender.
Yeah, so I just press the go button here, right?
Okay.
Just blend it?
Yep.
All right. I'm going to go turn it up a little bit.
This is a very civilized blender.
It's not loud. Now, wow. How much should we blend this for? A few seconds? Or?
Five more seconds.
That's a count.
Of course it has a count on it. You're a professional chef. I am not.
All right, there we are.
That's it. You know what? Can we go crazy?
Sure.
Can we put a few ice cubes in here?
That's up to you. Are you allowed to do that?
You know what? Yes.
This is your recipe.
It occurred to me I want this to be a little bit frothier.
Okay, good. Let's put that top back on.
I'm successfully offending every Latino
who's because you told me this is actually traditionally served room temperature, is that right?
It's room temperature, but you know what?
Okay.
It's 2020. Let's just go
right.
Crazy.
Press that button.
Go.
There you go.
Is it crushing the ice?
Oh, yeah.
I can't believe how civilized this is. Okay, now we're good.
Right.
Are you ready to try some?
I can't wait.
Okay.
Coquito.
Coquito.
So basically, it's like an eggnog.
Mm-hmm. And then we're just going to garnish it with a little cinnamon stick.
Right in there, huh?
Right in.
Awesome.
There you go.
Cheers.
L'chaim. Oh my God, that's so good. Oh.
Wow.
It's
that's
so
fun.
Sweet.
Mm-hmm. It's sweet. It's festive. It's not overpowering on any of the ingredients itself.
Right.
Wow, this is delicious. I love this. I can't wait to drink the rest of it. It's fantastic. You guys gotta try to make this.
Yes. Coquito.
Coquito.
Mmm. That's good.
We're gonna hear from one last Connecticut public voice right now. Here's reporter Frankie Graziano.
I'm Frankie Graziano, and I'm a reporter with Connecticut Public. Growing up in my big Italian family, we'd always go to my grandmother's house for Christmas Eve. That was the big holiday celebration. All the fried dough and shrimp you could imagine. Playing cards all night long, me gambling illegally at a young age. But for me, that wasn't the main event. It was what happened before we went to grandma's house when we would open presents at my parents' house, mainly my brother opening up presents. He'd either examine them very closely or shake them to find out what they were. If it was for me, it was probably an Aussie CD every year, or one year he got a police scanner and was able to shake it to find out what it was. It's a memory that involves my late brother, who I miss very much. God bless him, and God bless all of you out there. Please have a very special 2020 holiday season.
Thank you so much for that, Frankie. Sending you and yours one of those radio hugs you're so famous for. One final thing, listeners. A bit of a lesson on what's likely your New Year's Eve tradition.
Let's get this guy open here.
3, 2, 1.
Hey.
Mazel.
There we are.
Lots of bubbly wines may be referred to as champagne, but to be a true champagne, the wine has to be from Champagne.
You'll find recipes from this episode at ctpublic.org/seasoned, and you can watch us make them and see that gigantic chocolate eagle Eric Landgren has in his office at Bridgewater Chocolate, if in fact you would like to. It's an amazing work of delicious-looking art. Go to ctpublic.org/cutline. I'm Marisol Castro.
And I'm Chef Plum. Seasoned is produced by Robin Doyen-Aiken and Katie Tolarski.
Happy holidays, everyone, and thanks for listening.